T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That is Dancing on My Own by Robin. Sending that out to Ja Morant, who will be without his best pick and roll dance partner for the next month or so.
So Steven Adams gone for 3 to 5 weeks. What's the impact?
Considerable. You know, he's one of their best players. They've been much worse without him on the floor this season. They have the second best net rating, you know, points per one, you know, point differential per 100 possessions. So they have the second best net rating in the NBA this season after Boston on the whole.
Right.
With Adams off the floor, it's been good, but more in line with like the Knicks and the Jazz and like middle of the pack, you know, playoff contender kind of teams. So that's how they played this season with Adams off the floor. And so, you know, if they play at that level, they'll probably lose a little ground. If they play worse than that, you know, they could lose a lot of ground. So we'll see. It's been a bigger issue for them offensively than defensively without him, even though he doesn't score a lot. Just the little things he does in terms of the offensive rebounding, the screening, the playmaking, all that little stuff has been essential to like helping their offense work. So they're going to have to find a way. They have to play a lot differently without him and more often. And so that'll be interesting to see.
It's funny. I'm having a hard time remembering this, but in the playoffs last year, they were without Steven Adams. He got hurt in the playoffs, right? And then there was a question of whether
it was multiple things. Yeah. I mean, they benched him. They benched him against Minnesota, and then he got COVID, and then he got hurt. And so it was like all three of those things in succession.
So was the benching against Minnesota, because there were questions of whether they were better without Steven Adams. Is that matchup specific, or has Steven Adams had dramatically more impact this year than last?
Well, no, it was matchup specific. It was a playoff thing against Carl Anthony Towns, and some would argue that they overreacted to that. You know, Towns really abused him like in game one of that series, and they went away from it very quickly.
Right.
Whether they should have or not is up to debate, but that's what they did. You don't play Carl Anthony Towns every night. There aren't many like 7 foot, 260-pound dudes who can flash threes, you know? And so that's not typical. I do think Adams overall has been a little bit better this season than last season. He was great last season. But that is matchup-oriented. And so I think, you know, on the whole, this team is a lot better with Steven Adams.
Yeah.
You know, and how they deal with that, you know, going forward. I think what, you know, what they've done is they've Tillman has moved from out of the rotation to the starting lineup.
Right.
I think that'll continue, and they've kept Jackson, Clark, and Odom in their roles. I think that'll continue until unless they are forced to go away from that. But the other thing is that they don't have a lot of depth, and so, you know, if some other injury happens to one of those four, and then you get really into tricky territory.
Yeah, so they've historically gone with Tillman. You expect them to go with Tillman. Will we see more of these? Do you imagine we will see more of the interesting combinations, some of which we've wanted to see anyway, including Jaren and Santi together?
I don't assume we will. I'm actually writing. I wrote a whole big column yesterday that published, you know, 3 hours before the Adams news. I wasn't planning on writing again, but now I'm in the middle of writing another big column about sort of reacting to some of this stuff. And sort of what I said there is that, you know, the Grizzlies talk about, like, we don't have hard positions. They talk about, you know, basically just guards and wings and bigs, not power forwards and centers. That's how they talk. That's not how they function.
Right.
They are actually very strict about it. And so what they've tended to do is, you know, they'll call Steven – they don't call it, but they treat Steven Adams as a center and Brandon Clark as a center, and they treat – Jaren Jackson is a power forward and Santi Aldama is a power forward, and they play a center and a power forward. And so they do that now. This with Tillman. So what they tend to do is Tillman's the center and Clark's the center and Jaron's a power forward and Aldama's a power forward, and they don't play the two centers together. They don't play the two power forwards together. That's how they've actually functioned. I do think they should switch that. They should shake it up more. Because I don't see, I see it more how they talk than how they function. I don't see these as hard separations. I think they have, in fact, played Clark and Tillman together well in the past, and I think they could play Jackson and Aldama together well in the future. So I would advise shaking all that up, but that has not been how they functioned.
All right, so we will see what happens there. In the meantime, I guess the good health news is that Danny Green, on his podcast, said he expects to make his debut February 1. I think that's a home game against Portland. So that's good, right? That we'll get to see him before the trade deadline.
Yeah, it's good. It's also funny to me in all kinds of ways in that, like, it's so counter to how the Grizzlies actually operate.
Right.
You know, to, like, announce a week ahead, this is the day I'm going to play. I mean, does that mean we're not going to get, like, the questionable, you know, designation and then the doubtful?
No,
and then
we're still going to get all that. We're 100% going to get all that. Yes. It is interesting.
Does that Taylor Jenkins has to play him on that date? What if Taylor Jenkins decided to, like, you know, I'm sticking with Conchar and Zaire? Now, I would play him, and I think Jenkins will, but it's like, you know, to announce I am going to play on this date a week from now when, you know, you've never played for this team before, it's kind of funny to me.
Don't you think that they actually internally – have targeted dates like that for all their injuries? They just don't.
They just don't do it publicly. Sure.
And so then, in addition to that, then you had a story from Woj. Like, it is just funny. The NBA media is crazy. Like, it's just. And then in addition, you had a story from Woj about it, and Woj saying, you know, Danny Green saying he wants to be here for 2 years. And yes, none of this would have happened had he not gone and announced it on his podcast. But that's good news. And so that's the good news here. It's hard to feel too sorry for the Grizzlies, although they have, you know, it's one thing or another after another after another. But when you look around and you see Brooklyn, you know, has been going along without KD, and you see, the Warriors without Steph, and you see, I mean, you certainly can't, it doesn't feel like they've been beset by injuries any more than anyone else, right?
I don't think. I mean, I haven't committed it to study, but injuries happen all over the place all the time. It's just that we're only focused on the Grizzlies, or mostly focused on the Grizzlies. So I don't think their situation has been particularly special this season, no.
All right, the piece that you wrote for today was about half-court offense. Now, the piece that you did not address in it, of course, was Steven Adams' importance to the half-court offense because he wasn't gone yet.
Right.
He wasn't gone yet. I take it that is going to be a further blow, though, right?
Yeah, no, that is the one. If you had to pick apart one area of play, like that, where you miss him most, like you separate transition offense, transition defense, half court offense, half court defense. The one area where he is most important is probably the half court offense, because the core function of their half court offense is him setting picks for John Morant, and then everything that flows out of that. And so it's already been a weakness for them, and now you're taking away one of the most important tools you have in your half-court offense. So, yes, they just have to do it differently. I mean, they're going to have – instead of John Morant relying on that Steven Adams pick to spring him into tight spaces, it's going to have to be, like, spread out more and give him more real space instead of more, like, specific openings to me, which is why I think they should take a good look at the Jaren Jackson, Santi Aldama thing, because that's the best way to space it out.
It's sort of remarkable. When they talked in the offseason about what they needed to do better, the biggest focus was half-court offense. And that is ostensibly why they made some of the changes they made, why they brought in the rookies they brought in. Here we are, as you documented in the piece today, which people can read at the Daily Memphian. Here we are a year later, and they've gone from 22nd in half-court offense to 23rd in half-court offense, which is pretty striking for an elite team, for them to be. And while they talked about the changes they were making to improve their half-court offense, none of them really – you couldn't have imagined that they would necessarily have much of an impact helping the upward trajectory in the first year, right? Like, why would we think
that's the thing. Like, Jake LaRavia and David Roddy might might function really well in the way they envision it, like next year and the year after or the year after or whatever. But they're not even playing right now. And like, and not to keep harping on this, but like Kyle Anderson's shooting 40% from three, by the way. If you follow Minnesota people, they're like, you know, I used to assume the shots fall on when Kyle Anderson shoots it, which sounds weird, but that's the season he's having. and like Melton and Anderson were just much better. I mean, these are much better. But even in terms of shooting, they've been more effective at that this season than those rookies have been.
I guess there's some hope that John Conchar would have been more effective.
Well, Aldama's been good though. That's why, you know, I don't really question the Anderson thing. Aldama's been good, but they didn't, and maybe, you know, maybe Danny Green starts playing and the whole thing changes a little bit. If you have Green and Aldama sort of in those roles, you know, maybe so, but the idea that, you know, we're bringing in these rookies to help their half-court offense and to give us more shooting and more spacing, that might be true ultimately, but that's not the effect this season.
Yeah. I guess the way I would phrase it is that it's sort of remarkable to think that they identified this as this is a problem for us. We need to be better in the half-court offense. And yet practically, really, for this year, they did nothing to fix it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Danny Green might help fix it. Okay. You identified, though, three of the issues that went into this, the half-court offense. One is Dylan, and here we are again. Here we go again. Dylan's usage is too high. Jaren's usage is too low. What else did you say? Zaire Williams and free throws. Those four categories you wrote about. Let's just start with the usage questions with Dylan and Jaren Jackson Jr. Is it trending worse again, or what's happening with Dylan?
Yeah, his efficiency has been trending down in the last, you know, I'd say couple weeks, and that could pop trend back up. It's never been good, but it's been pretty bad lately. And so on the whole in the season, you know, this issue they've had with him of the gap between his usage and efficiency being among the widest in the league, it's still among the widest in the league. And I illustrate that in some specific terms. And so he's just doing too much offensively, and especially in terms of shooting and scoring, for how poorly he's been doing it. Now they have, you know, I think if you go back to, you know, before last season or go back to last season or whatever, he was not definitively behind Desmond Bane in terms of, you know, from a shot volume perspective, but he is this season. So he successfully pushed down to third in the pecking order, but he has not pushed down to fourth behind Jackson. And that's sort of the work still to be done. And it's not like Jaren is wildly efficient for a big, but he's way more efficient in what he does than Dylan is. And I illustrate, he's shooting better inside the arc. He's shooting better from 3-point line, and he's drawing many more fouls relative to the shots he takes. And so you get a lot more on average out of Jaren Jackson shot attempts than you do Dylan Brooks shot attempts. And I think that is still not where it needs to be in terms of pecking order.
Thoughts on Zaire?
Well, it's not just Zaire. It's sort of it's the wing depth, which we've been talking about. It's Zaire and Conchar as your wings off the bench. And, you know, Zaire had the one good fourth quarter in that near comeback against Phoenix. But you take that fourth quarter aside, Zaire and Conchar have both been consistently unproductive offensively for weeks at this point. And that's just, you can't keep getting that. It's not tenable for you. And I, you know, Zaire has the skills, as he showed in that fourth quarter against Phoenix, you know, to be what you want him to be, but it's just, it hasn't gotten to the point that you're ready to rely on it. And so, you know, whether it's Danny Green or the trade deadline, and it's more than likely just Danny Green, they need more pop from their wings off the bench.
And then you mentioned free throw shootings, but the problem with free throw shooting is there's not much to be done, although it will probably improve in the next 3 to 5 weeks.
So the free throw shooting will get better, yeah.
Yes. All right, last question, and this is about the I was looking more at the Oscar nominations. Anything particularly surprising to you or unjust? Like Top Gun Maverick was nominated as a Best Picture. It's obviously not going to win, but doesn't seem like the type of movie that typically would be nominated. Nope was not nominated. Should Nope have been included? What were your thoughts on Best Picture?
I was surprised Nope got no nominations in any category. Nope was my, like, I don't remember, third, fourth favorite movie of the year. And so, and it was also a hit, by the way. It was like an actual hit that I thought was one of the best movies of the year. I'm not surprised it did not get a Best Picture nomination. It obviously would have been on my list. I think even though it was kind of a hit, I think people sort of struggled with it. It's a pretty, like, it's a pretty hard movie to get your hands around. So that didn't surprise me, but I was surprised it got completely shut out. Yeah. I was surprised The Woman King got completely shut out, which was a sort of an action epic starring, and now I'm blanking, Viola Davis. Mm-hmm. Those are the two movies I was most surprised got, I think, zero nominations.
And your two favorites are for Best Picture are the ones you liked were Tar and Banshees of whatever.
Inisherin.
Those two, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I haven't seen either.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.